Okay, we started last week a series of two attitudes that a Christian must have. One is I can, and the other is I will. And without those two attitudes, we will not serve God to the best of our ability. Last week, we looked at we started looking at Paul. Paul is going to be our case of, he's the one who said, I can do all things who strengthens me. And he proved that. We looked last week at the things he forfeited. He gave up money. He gave up prestige. He gave up honor. And he gave up money. He gave up his livelihood. Of course, money sometimes is not nearly as important to people as the praise that they get from others. Dee Bowman, many years ago, he and his brothers were singers. And he said that you don't do it for money so many times. It's for the applause and to be told how great you are. He said that's why it's so hard for singers. They'll do anything. Even though they're not making much money, they want the applause and the glory that you get from it. And, of course, Paul was... He was rising. He was a rising star in the Jewish religion, and so we looked at those things, and then we looked at the things he suffered. And the only thing we really got to was that he was beaten, and that was something that not too many of us would want to do once. And let's turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 11. This is kind of where we're taking our section from, to see the things that Paul himself listed that he underwent. And yet he persevered. And so this shows us, these are the things we're looking at. And in under each section, we're just doing a very few of the things that we could list. Because if we took at one each every one of them, we'd be here all year. And we don't want to do that. So let's read, Sally, would you read 2 Corinthians chapter 11, start in verse 23 and read through verse 28.
Are they ministers of Christ? I speak, are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more, in labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequently, in deaths often. From the Jews 5 times I received 40 stripes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods, once I was stoned, 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I have been in the deep. In journeys often, in perils of water, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils of the city, in perils of the wilderness, in perils of the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness and toil, in sleeplessness often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness. Besides the other things, what comes upon me daily, my deep concern for all the churches.
Okay. One thing that I didn't have on here, and I noticed this morning, or last yesterday, one or the other, verse 23, and far more imprisonments. You know, we know of a few times Paul was in prison, but he sounds like he was in prison quite often. And so one thing I want us to remember as we're studying, not only for this class, but all the time, the Bible is not written for to satisfy our curiosity. It's written to give us enough so that we can have faith and confidence in our salvation and in God and all the things he's done from Genesis through Revelation. If man had written the Bible, there would be so much more things that, you know, the story of Noah would be an entire book this big. He preached for 100 years, but he just gets a few chapters. And so, but the same thing with the life of Paul. Paul mentions these things. Just like with the beatings, you know, he said he was beaten times without number, and none of the five times that he received the lashes from the Jews that I know of are recorded. He says, three times I was beaten with rods. Once was all I could find. And if all these things that Paul's saying were not true, the Jews would have been happy to have jumped on that and proved him wrong, a false prophet, a false teacher, a liar. And they would have tried to dismiss him for that. But we find none of that either. They can't prove him wrong in the things he says. So I'm having trouble with my glasses this morning, so you're going to have to bear with me. So this morning what we're going to start looking at is he said he was stoned. I think he said he was stoned three times. Once I was stoned. Get that mixed up. Once he was stoned. And the only record we have of that, which is listed in Acts 14. So let's turn to Acts 14, chapter 19. Chapter 14, verse 19. That didn't make sense. Melissa, read that, please.
And there came thither certain Jews from Antioch and Iconium, who persuaded the people, and having stoned Paul, drew him out of the city, supposing him to be dead.
And at this point, it says, supposing him to be dead. Was he dead? We don't know. Whatever it was. I mean, even after this bad beating, the brethren gathered around him, and he got up and he walked into the city. So God was with him through this. Whatever this stoning was, God allowed him to survive. This was not the first time they wanted to stone him, though. Look at verse 5. Melissa, read that also.
And when there was an assault made both with Gentiles and also with the Jews, with their rulers, to use them despitefully and to stone them.
Okay. So they wanted to stone him earlier. In Iconium, but he escaped. But when he got to Lystra, they did stone him. And so, can you imagine continuing on as Paul did, knowing that everywhere he went, he was going to face mistreatment? And yet he just continued to do what God wanted him to do. And yet this man said, I can do anything. In other words, I can endure the beatings. I can endure the stonings. I can endure the imprisonments. I will do what I have to do to serve my Lord and my Master. Any questions or comments on the stoning? Okay, let's turn to Acts 27. He talked about he was shipwrecked. I think that was what he said three times. Yes, three times I was shipwrecked. This is the only record we have. And it's interesting that the one record we have is after the book of Corinthians was written. And so we're not going to read verse 9 through 44 here, but we know that he's on in Acts chapter 27. We know he's on his journey to Rome, and he told them not to go. They went anyway and tried to persuade them to winter in a certain place, but they went and they were shipwrecked, but God granted him the lives of all that were with him. But wouldn't it be interesting to know about the at least other three times? We don't know if there could have been more after he wrote the book of Corinthians, but we know by the time he wrote 2 Corinthians, he had been shipwrecked three times. And so, and yet he just keeps continuing on. You would think after a while he could feel, okay, God, you know, I've proved myself to you. Can't my life get a little bit easier? But we never hear any of that from Paul. He just continues on, doing the things that God requires of him. And this is a case in point when he wrote this, that had he not been able to have proved that, there had to be some kind of proof of these three shipwrecks. This didn't involve the Jews. They wouldn't even have to take the blame for it. A ship being wrecked at sea is nobody's fault. As far as something they can plan or plot to do, as we will see later, that his countrymen were constantly trying to plot to hurt him. But Paul continued on. And so the Jews would have loved to have used this to turn against him and say, okay, Paul, where's your proof that all these things are happening? This is one that you know, it's out to sea. What proof do you have? Other people were on the boat, so it wouldn't have just been Paul. Paul wasn't out in the ship by himself. And so, but he continued on. These are the things that he endured. And one of the things that he endured. Any questions or comments on the shipwrecked?
I think it's interesting, you know, as you read this scripture here about it, that he's not only faced with the dangers of the sea, but he gives wise counsel. And you know how it sometimes we teach others or we try to give wise counsel to others and we turn a deaf ear. And they do what they want to do anyway. And this is what happened on this trip. And so he keeps warning them, you know, we don't need to do this. And they do what they want to do. They listen to the captain. And he listens to the men. And so they put other things besides doing what a man of God says. Mm-hmm. And so, but he continues on. He just doesn't give up and, you know, just fooling on you, you know, kind of thing. And so we need to take that in consideration sometimes too. And, you know, going hungry and fasting and, you know, other things that he's telling.
Okay, we're going to deal with those in a little bit.
I mean, on this trip. Okay, yes.
That's true. Yeah. But,
you know, his goal wasn't just getting to Rome. His goal was to learn Christ. To be, that's what he kept in his mind, as you know, as we looked at, was to gain Christ, to gain heaven. That's the strength, you know, that you talked about.
Well, that's what we have to have. We have to know that there is a greater goal than what we're facing. And really, so far in our lives, or at least in my life, I can't say that I have really ever faced any strong persecution. I mean, there have been people who didn't appreciate God's word and spurned it, but and Steve's gotten fired once because of his preaching. But I don't really classify that grave persecution as such as Paul had and the things that Paul faced. And that's why I want us to look at these things, because when we look at our lives, how are we going to stand before, first of all, Christ, who gave up heaven and came to die for us? And then men like Paul and so many others, we're just using Paul as a test case, but the other apostles, you know, we don't have records of their lives. We don't have the record of Peter's life after the conversion of Cornelius. It switches over and the rest of the book of Acts is pretty much dealing with Paul. And so we don't know what happened to the apostles and the rest of them in their lives, except from what we have from secular history. But we have a divine, inspired record of Paul's life. And for a man to stand and say, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, and then for me to have a trial in my life that I want to stand before God and say, I just couldn't take it, we better think twice. And that's why I thought this lesson was good for me as I studied for it, because we get to thinking our life is hard sometimes, things that aren't going our way, there may be problems, and you know, people aren't getting along at the congregation like we think they should. What am I going to do? Am I going to be a light, or am I just going to disappear into the darkness? And so we need to stand up and say, oh, yes, I can do this. God's not going to ask me to do anything I can't do, and so I can do this. Okay, let's look. This question, the next question, what I did is on number 9 and number 13, I combined them. So we're going to do 9 and 13 combined today. And the dangers, there were some of these that really there was no passages that I could turn to, but I wanted us to stop and think about the things. What were some of the things listed in this section here that we're not going to cover in our other things, like dangers from countrymen and that kind of thing, especially here in verse, let me get back over here, in verse 26. What are some of the things that y'all listed that he faced that we're not going to discuss in it, that we have passages we can turn to?
Verse 26,
Acts. Just, Corinthians. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 26.
Oh.
Sorry. Did I not have that on there?
No.
No. Okay, it's what happens when you know what you want. Assume everybody else is on the same. All right, let me make me a note here. Okay, he faced the rivers. He had robbers, dangers in the wilderness, whatever those were, on the sea. We can see, we realize some of that on the sea as far as the shipwrecks that he underwent. We know of at least four. And so when we travel, we don't think about things like dangers from the rivers. We don't have to ford the rivers. We've got a road over the river. Paul didn't. He had to go through the rivers. Remember, so much of his traveling was how? How did people back then travel? That's right. They were on foot. They were walking. They didn't have to go down to the airport and, you know, get your ticket and jump on a nice air-conditioned plane or even a train. I don't know that they even, you know, back in the early days of America, they had stagecoaches. I don't know if they had those kind of things. We never hear of him talking about those kind of things. But then we know they walked a lot of the places they went. Or even if you were on a camel or a donkey. Can you imagine trying to go across a rushing river on a camel or a donkey? I think I'd rather take my chances that I could swim. Of course, I'm not much of a swimmer. And robbers, we don't think about that. You know, you camp for the night. You don't go to a nice hotel. You don't go sit down in a nice restaurant and eat, or even a run-in joint. They didn't have that. Everything they did was outside. They slept outside. They ate outside. So they were, especially in the dark when it got dark and they couldn't see the robbers coming. And so these are the kind of things that he faced. Like I say, I don't know what the dangers of the wilderness would be. But his travel and in his lifetime, his travel in his lifetime would have been so different from anything that we even begin to think about. And yet, how many journeys did he take that we know of? Three. Three traveling journeys. And the only other mode of transportation that we read about and can know he took besides ship was walking. And you think of how many miles he covered and the things that he would have been through. Even if he didn't have to worry about the robbers, just a place to eat, a place to sleep. Where did he bathe? You know, in our hotel rooms, we have bathrooms. And even if you stay, we've stayed in one or two places that the bathroom's down the hall. But, you know, it's not in your room, but there's one convenient, and everybody can have their turn. We don't think about those. How did he wash his clothes? There wasn't a laundromat that you just go drop your quarters in and wash your clothes. And yet they're traveling. It's hot. We don't think about those things. These are just things that would never enter my mind when I'm traveling to think about the things that he had to face and that he had to deal with.
You know, the heat and the cold is one of the things that I jotted down. The weather, we're so used to being in a closed car or in, you know, planes and things like that. But if you're walking, the weather has a big thing to do with it. And just barely mentioning when he writes to Timothy, he says, "When you come, bring me my coat."
Mm-hmm.
And so he could have been exposed to cold. He could have been, you know, exposed to heat. And, you know, just overwhelmed by some of those things if he allowed himself to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very true.
And animals, you know, there were such things as wild dogs and mm-hmm. and animals, you know, especially out in the wilderness and everything. You don't know what's out there, you know, besides men.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Any other comments? Okay, the next thing we're going to look at is dangers from his countrymen. You know, when we talk about his countrymen, we're talking about the Jews. The Jews were the people who thought he was wonderful before he became a Christian, before he became what Christ wanted him to be and do the work that Christ wanted him to do. He was out trying to destroy the very thing now that he's trying to build. And his countrymen weren't too happy that he's switched sides. And down in verse 32 and 33 of 2 Corinthians 11, Let's see. Carol, would you read that, please?
What was the verse?
2 Corinthians 11, 20, 32 through 33. 11, 32 and 33.
In Damascus, the...
That's good enough.
Under Damascus the king was guarding the city of his Damascus things in order to seize me, and I let down in a basket through a window in the wall, and so escaped his hand.
So he mentions this in this reading here, in this same section that we're talking about. Does anybody remember where that is? Where that happened? Turn to Acts 9. Sandra, read 23 through 25.
But Saul increased all the more in strength and confounded the Jews who dwelt in Damascus, proving that this Jesus is the Christ. Now, after many days were passed, the Jews plotted to kill him. But their plot became known to Saul, and they watched the gate day and night to kill him. Then the disciples took him by night and let him down through the wall in a large basket.
Okay. Verse 22 says he was in Damascus. So this was in Damascus early on after his conversion. So from the very beginning, this would have happened probably within 3 years of his conversion. His conversion was in AD 33 or 36, and this was probably when he got to Jerusalem after he escaped from the basket. It was 36 to 39, so somewhere in that time frame. And I'm not good with dates. I've got it written in my Bible. It's the only reason I know those dates, as everybody knows, I don't remember dates. Steve uses me as an example in his sermon sometimes about people who can't remember dates. But anyway. So this was early on in his work as an apostle, and so they were out to get him from the beginning. And now we're going to jump down, and there's a lot in between. But we're not, like, this is one of those things. If we tried to deal with all of them, we could spend probably 4 or 5 classes just talking about the times we have recorded. If we went into detail about them, at least 2 or 3 classes. So, but let's turn to Acts chapter 20 for the second example I have here, or the first on y'all's lesson. Amanda, would you read verse 17 through 19, please?
From Miletus, he sent to Ephesus and called to him the elders of the church, and when they had come to him, he said to them, "You yourself know from the first day that I set foot in Asia how I was with you the whole time."
Through 19.
Okay, I'm sorry. Serving the Lord with all humility and the tears and the trials which came upon me through the plots of the Jews.
Okay. So he talks about the plot of the Jews. That's, here again, he's not getting to do exactly, take his trip exactly like he wanted to. But he called for the elders from Ephesus, and they come to him. And over in verse 3, let's see, I think I've got my verse written down wrong. Let's find myself here. Okay. Anyway, he talked about the plots of the Jews. The Jews were constantly after him. And he was talking about the plots that they had all the time he was in Asia. They follow him around. That's one thing we're going to see. They keep following Paul around everywhere Paul goes. So here comes the Jews. Even in the Gentile countries, they follow him around and they try to stir up and cause him problems. And so... this is something that would we continue on? What would we do? You know, if you know somebody's out to get you, do you think you're just going to try to fly under the radar after a while and just stay out of their way? Leave me, you know, I think I would kind of feel like, leave me alone. I know what it was. I was in the wrong chapter, no wonder it wasn't looking right. Chapter 20, verse 3. It's talking about when he was in Macedonia, he spent 3 months there, and there was a plot formed against him by the Jews. And that's why he changed his trip, and he winds up having, you know, he calls the elders of Ephesus to him. And so it's not only him that has to change plans, other people do too. So any comment or question on Acts chapter 20, verse 17 through 19? And this was on his third journey. Okay, let's turn to Acts chapter 23. This is at the end of his third journey. Amy, would you read verse 12 and 12 through 14, please, of chapter 23 of Acts?
12 through
14? Mm-hmm.
While so engaged, as I was journeying to Damascus with the authority and commission of the chief priests, at midday of the morning I saw on the way a light from heaven brighter than the sun.
Acts 23?
Oh, I'm on 26.
Okay. I thought, okay, something's not sounding right here.
And bound themselves under an oath, saying that they would neither eat nor drink until they had killed Paul. There were more than 40 who formed this plot. They came to the chief priests and the elders and said, "We have bound ourselves under a solemn oath to taste nothing until we have killed Paul."
Okay, and then Tammy, would you read 23 through 25?
And he called to them two of the centurions and said, "Get 200 soldiers ready by this. By the third hour of the night, to proceed to Caesarea with 70 horsemen and 200 spearmen. They were also to provide mounts to put Paul on and bring him safely to the governor." And he wrote a letter having him.
Okay. So here he's, because of the Jews, they bound themselves under an oath, and he's in prison at this time. We'll look at that in just a little bit more in a minute. But because of his nephew, it comes to the understanding of the leaders, and so they get him out of there. But to get a little bit of background, let's go back and look at chapter 21. This is how he winds up in prison in the first place. In chapter 21, verse 18, actually in verse 17, after they had arrived in Jerusalem, the brethren received them gladly. And then Paul goes and he's with James and the elders, and they were rejoicing, and they greeted him, and they began glorifying God. Verse 20, because they saw how many thousands were becoming that were among the Jews who had believed, and they were zealous. And yet it says they were all zealous for the law. We've got to keep in mind here, this has been a passage, when I was younger, this was a passage that always bothered me until I came to understand better, or at least I think I understand better what it's talking about. The things that are dealt with in 21 and 22 concerning the vow and the things that Paul was willing to do, this was not in any way a religious thing. Remember that their law was civil and religious. And until the destruction of Jerusalem, there were certain things under the civil law that they needed to do. The priests were still being supported in those kind of things. And once that was ended, with the destruction of Jerusalem, these things would no longer be. But it was not, this was not, Paul took a vow of any kind to the Jewish law or anything like that. But anyway, he took these men, there were some men who were under a vow, four men who were under a vow, and then in verse 25, take them and purify yourself along with them and pay their expenses, and so they did. But then they accused Paul of something. Does anybody remember what they accused Paul of? That made the Jews thought, "Ah, oh, we've got it."
Well, up above, they had accused him actually of teaching against telling the Jews they don't need to circumcise their children, which is
yeah. But that was not what they used against him.
This next time, but they said that they had taken the Gentile into the
That's family. Right. They thought Titus was with him,
but it's not true that he taught told them not to.
No, but that's not why. But he would. But he does not tell them. He doesn't tell them not to. But he doesn't tell them they have to do it to be saved.
That's right.
That was the whole thing. If they wanted to circumcise their children, Paul wouldn't tell them they couldn't circumcise their kids. It just didn't have anything to do with their salvation or their promise from God anymore. But the thing that they were using against him to get him arrested was accusing him of bringing a Gentile into the temple, which was not true. And so then from there, they were down in verse 31 through 36. They're mad. And the city was in an uproar. The city was provoked. And they, verse 31, while they were seeking to kill him, a report came to the Roman commander. And so the Roman commander comes in and swoops him up to save him, basically. But he still winds up putting him in prison. And he eventually arrests him. And then his first defense is in chapter 22. And then his second defense is in chapter 23, verse 1 through 6. And then the passage we're looking at, they're still not through. They've got him in jail, but they're not happy with that. They want him dead. How much more dangerous could you be in? And you would think these, in some ways, were his brethren in the flesh. This would be like he was part of this family. He was of the tribe of Benjamin. Everybody that was from the tribe of Benjamin was his kinsmen. But they're not happy with that. They want him dead. And so that's when these over 40 Jews form this conspiracy, and they're going to get him this time. They're done. They're not going to eat, and so they've got this. They want him brought to Jerusalem, back into have another trial or whatever they want to do, and they're going to kill him on the way. And then Paul's nephew hears about this, and so he is saved by that act of his nephew going to the commander. And so I cannot imagine anybody being hated so badly that you're going to say, I'm not going to eat until he's dead. That's pretty bad hatred. I mean, how many of us are going to miss a meal very often? I mean, we do occasionally, but that's not we're not going to say we're not going to eat. And there's 40 of them, over 40 of them. So it's not like I could say it and just kind of get by with, oh, well, I didn't mean it.
I always wonder when they started eating.
Yeah, I do too. I wonder if they died or what happened. That would be interesting to know. That's one of those things we wish the Bible gave us a little more information. I'm sure they did. I doubt many of them died. Their excuse was, well, it didn't work out the way we planned. They took him to Caesarea. They got him out of here. They got him out of Jerusalem. So we're good. It's not our fault. So this is the kind of dangers that he faced from his countrymen. But they're not done yet. And Paul continues on. And so in Acts 26, verse 2, Elizabeth, would you read Acts 26, verse 2, verse 6 and 7, and verse 9? And I'll let Sandra read 19 through 21.
In regard to all the things of which I am by the Jews, I consider myself fortunate, King Agrippa, that I am about to make my defense before you today. And now I am standing trial for the hope of the promise made by God to our fathers, the promise to which our 12 tribes hope to attain as they earnestly serve God night and day. And for this hope, O King, I am being accused by the Jews.
Therefore, King Agrippa, I was not disobedient to the heavenly vision, but declared first to those in Damascus and in Jerusalem and throughout all the region of Judea, and then to the Gentiles, that they should repent, turn to God, and do works befitting repentance. For these reasons, the Jews seized me in the temple and tried to kill me.
Okay, so here he is. He's still defending himself. And he continues on, trying to show that he's just simply trying to serve God. And he wound up appealing to Caesar because he, back in chapter 25, he was before Festus. And down in verse 8, while Paul in his own said in his own defense, I have committed no offense either to the against the law of the Jews, against the temple, or against Caesar. But you know, Festus wanted to cater to the Jews, and so he asked, "Are you willing to go to Jerusalem and stand before me on these charges?" And Paul says no, because he knows if he goes back to Jerusalem, all they want to do is kill him. He's not going to get a fair hearing. He knew that. He didn't know if he'd make it back, because that's when they want to kill him, is on the way to there. And so he appealed to Caesar. And it's interesting, he tells Festus, at some point he tells Festus, "You know I've not done any of this. You know this is not true." But Festus was, you know, he wanted to make the Jews happy, and so that's basically what he was going to do. But they had made everything he tried to do almost impossible. Even in families, you know, there problems arise in families, and it takes a while sometimes to get them worked out. You're ready to just for it to be over, walk away. Hey, I'm done with y'all. And it would be very easy for Paul to feel that way. Just, you know, I'm done. I've done enough. I've done all I can do. And there's no reason for me to continue on. And like I said, this is just a sampling in Acts 13, Acts 14, Acts 17, Acts 18. And those are just some of the ones I found. There may be others. But he constantly had troubles from the Jews. They always wanted to kill him. Get rid of him, because he was such a powerful voice, because he had been so adamant against this Jesus, and now he's preaching this Jesus. And if Paul changed, maybe I ought to too, is what the Jews are going to be concerned about, that people might, that they're losing their power here, they think. Okay, any other questions or comments on Paul suffering from the Jews? Okay, then he says, dangers from the Gentiles. And all of these things that I have listed on these, now that I guess I better tell you, they're all from my Acts 11. All these questions, I'm not sure I made that clear. I'll have to go back and look at that again. Nope, I don't think I'm 2 Corinthians, what did I say? Okay, 2 Corinthians chapter 11. I need to go back and make a note of that. I thought I put that on there, but evidently I didn't. It was in my mind, it was on there. But anyway, in Acts 14, we see some of the dangers he suffered from the Gentiles, verse 1 through 7. And we're not going to take time to read all of that, because I want to finish this point, and we've got about 4 or 5 minutes. He's in Iconium, and what happened? Anybody?
Some of the Jews stirred up the Gentiles.
Okay.
Some of them believe Paul and some of them believe the Jews.
Mm-hmm. And so, but they stirred up enough of them that we've already seen, we mentioned already in verse 5, that they wanted to stone, that they tried to stone them, mistreat them and stone them. And so, yes, the Gentiles, he has dangers from the Gentiles. The Gentiles didn't stand up to the Jews, they kind of joined in with them. And so this time, it's a combination of both. Now, in Acts 19, what's the setting there? Does anybody want to fill in the blanks? Happening in Ephesus?
Before you go to Acts 19, I want to say all the things we were talking about, how bad the Jews were,
mm-hmm.
and one verse says that one of the talks about what the Jews tried to influence the Gentiles, one verse says they poisoned their minds.
Mm-hmm.
They are just so obsessed with this idea of Paul.
That's right. And if we're not careful, sometimes there may be an issue and we hear one side of the issue. And even in congregations this happens. Our minds can be poisoned. That's why we need to get all the facts. The Gentiles didn't get all the facts. They didn't give... either they didn't listen to Paul or didn't give him a chance to fully explain what he's doing and why the Jews hate him so bad. But we need to be careful about that and not allow our minds to be poisoned. That's a good translation. Okay, Acts 19. What's going on in Acts 19? 23 through 32.
Gets into their pocketbook and he talks against the idols, and there's a riot and big uproar and everything because he's teaching one to God instead of the idols.
That's right. It's interesting in this case, Paul is not. I mean, he could have been, but if he had not been persuaded to go down into the theater, but the disciples did not want him to go down in there because they knew what would happen. They were already, it's a confusion, and they're dragging Gaius and Aristarchus, who were traveling companions from Macedonia. Paul wanted to go down there, but the disciples just wouldn't let him. And so, was it because Paul was afraid? No. I think this is by the grace of God. Paul's work's not done. And Paul's got some other things to do. And if he gets dragged down in there and killed, Satan will win, so to speak. And so, but he was persuaded not to go down because he listened to wisdom, but anyway, but it was always problems. The Jews, it came from the Gentiles. This one, the Jews, as far as we know, had nothing to do with it. Linda's right. They got in their pocketbook, and so they're mad. And so that was the reason this time. But in the case in Iconium, it was because of the Jews who stirred up the Gentiles. Okay, it's time.
This is to me an example where wisdom was more than just testing God's grace. You know, sometimes we think that we can step into the fire. Mm-hmm. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, God's going to keep us from getting burned. Mm-hmm. You know? Well, Paul listened to wise counsel this time. You know? Mm-hmm. Other times, like when he went to Jerusalem, he knew he was going to be arrested. He knew he was going to go mm-hmm. to Rome. The Lord had told him that. But you know, this time, he didn't put his foot in the fire. You know, he was wise. Yep. And so, you know, when we're affronted with certain trials, it's okay to back off and live to fight another day, or to go, you know, and wiped his feet of the Jews and went into the Gentiles to teach. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's not that we've just got to, God's going to take care of me and I'm going to do this, you mm-hmm. know, attitude all the time, although he did believe in God's protective power.
Yes, he did. Okay, so we're going to stop there and we'll pick up with number 12. And remember, we've already dealt with what I had on number 13. So we'll pick up with 12 and then do 14.